Welcome to the September 5th, 2006 meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. The microphone should be on. Yeah. Board of Education meeting. We have a lot of people here this evening. First thing I'd like to ask, though, is if there are cell phones, if you'd turn your cell phones off for us, please. We'd really appreciate that. The second thing is I need to report on our closed session. We did have a conference with our legal counsel regarding anticipated litigation, and the board did vote on a waiver of student expulsion and a stipulated expulsion hearing. First thing I'd like to entertain is a consensus on the order of business.
Mr. President?
Yes.
That motion needs to be taken in open session.
Okay. Well, then. Right, and I would be corrected. The waiver was on the hearing, and then we had a stipulated expulsion order. I've been informed that we need to take that vote in open session. Would you like to make the motion, Mr. Millar?
I move that we approve the stipulated expulsion and that we direct staff to make revisions to the rehabilitation plan consistent with the comments of the board during closed session.
Second.
It's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Next would be consensus on an order of business. And I would like to recommend, because we do have a lot of folks that would like to speak this evening, that we allow our students to go first, and then they can have the choice of whether they'd like to stay or not. Is that acceptable to the board?
You mean our student representatives?
Our student representatives. Then instead of moving to correspondence or action on the approval of minutes, let's just move to reports by the student representatives at this point. And it looks like we've got a couple of new student representatives, one whom I recognize. Hey, Yoni. You want to begin?
I'd love to. Good evening, everyone. My name is Yoni Moskowitz. I am a senior at Morro Bay High School, and I will be your student representative for the next couple of months. Executives who helped us reach these scores. Okay. A full schedule is in progress for all of our fall sports, and the fall sports assembly will be held on September 22nd. We will be introducing each team and sport through a media presentation that our members of the ASB have created. We would also like to invite all of our board members and central administration to use the season passes we have given out and to come support Morro Bay Pirates this fall. We also invite everyone back to our back-to-school night on Wednesday, September 13th, and it should be a fun and eventful evening. Club Rush, for anyone interested, will be the week of September 11th through the 15th, and we are excited to recruit new members into all of the fun clubs this year. Our freshman transition group starts September 20th, and we are hoping that this six-week course will help the freshmen acclimate into the high school setting. Oh, student ID and picture makeup will be on September 25th for anyone who missed the pictures. And on September 29th at 7 a.m. is our first breakfast club of the year. This is a chance for staff members to meet outside of a classroom setting students who they feel are exemplary and who they would like to know better, and it's provided by the ASB. And speaking of ASB, our class has begun planning our homecoming, which will be held October 9th through 14th. And once again, my name is Yoni Moskowitz, and I'll be looking forward to reporting back next month.
Great, and one thing I would like to say is that improvement in API scores that we're hopeful that Morro Bay High School will be it's been nominated as a National Blue Ribbon School, and that this might be something that leads to that honor for the school, and it's real exciting for everybody.
I think Morro Bay would be very proud to have that. In addition to our, I think, distinguished school that we achieved last year, so thank you.
Probably can't read my name. I'm Megan Parrish.
I'm from San Luis Obispo High School. I'm a senior this year. And we've had a great start to the year. We have a nice group of incoming freshmen, and they're all very outgoing, so it's going to be a great year for them. I just wanted to tell you about, we had a great turnout to back-to-school night on August 28th, the day before school started, and we had a barbecue. And we also had a freshman parent meeting with counselors about our new program, Freshman Fast Start. It's study skills for ninth graders who have been targeted as needing special help. And there's little programs such as after-school tutoring for other subjects besides math. There was a ninth-grade parent meeting on the 28th before open house. And an assignment book is distributed to the freshmen to keep all their homework organized. And also, a counseling intern will be at the school to work primarily with at-risk students. So they're going to have a great year. And also, we have a great website, and it's working. It's functional right now. There's the almost all of the teachers have web pages. We have a calendar of all the activities that are going on. There's a Tiger Beat.
You're welcome to stay. You're actually welcome to engage in discussions with us on topics that relate to our agenda. You can't vote, but you're more than welcome to stay. Or you're more than welcome to go and do your homework. So you can take it either way. At this point, then, we'll save our reports by school staff for after public comment. Let's move on to approval of minutes, please. So if we could have a motion for the approval of minutes of the August 22nd meeting. It's been moved by Mrs. Dickinson. And anybody wish to second that? Seconded by Mr. Millar. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, I'll take a vote on that. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Correspondence. We did receive some correspondence from Mrs. Burton regarding school fencing, and we'll acknowledge that. At this point, we'll move on to public comment. And a couple of things I'd like to point out. We do have a lot of people who would like to be speaking this evening. The first thing I want to point out is that this is an opportunity to provide individuals or representatives of a group to address the board concerning issues of public interest. The board will hear individuals, but we will not engage in a discussion or take action on items not included on the posted agenda. Right, we can't. That would be a violation of the Brown Act. A couple of other things I'd just like to remind folks that we'd like to keep the presentations as brief as possible. The maximum time limit on any comment will be 3 minutes, and we're going to enforce that really strictly this evening because we do have so many people who'd like to speak. If there are questions addressed to the board, I, as board president, will refer them to staff members or to the superintendent for replies. We will not take any action on items during public comment, as that would, again, that would be an illegal act by the board. And finally, a speaker may offer criticism of school operations and programs that may concern them, but in public session, the board will not hear personal complaints of school personnel nor complaints against any employee of the system. Other channels provide for board consideration and disposition of complaints involving individuals, and in that sense, Dr. Valentine can be contacted for that, and he'll see that all any of those issues would be handled through the proper channels. So given that, Mr. Millar, would you like to go ahead? And what we'll do is we'll give you a couple of names so that we can kind of get things going here. Oh, and before we start, I'd like Dr. I think Dr. Valentine has a comment. I'm sorry.
Well, I thought I'd take just a moment anyway to welcome everybody here tonight and appreciate your participation in your community. My understanding is that a number of folks here tonight, Mr. President, are here to address the issue of a fence at Del Mar, and I thought maybe I'd frame that conversation and maybe I could share some information that may have some bearing on what you'd like to share with us. First of all, just a statement of common purpose, and that is that all of us are intensely interested in the safety of our children, and that's really not an issue of debate. what has been an issue of some conversation has really been part of the process issue, has been to try to find out what is the wishes of the Del Mar community. And so our recommendation has been to go and work through the PTA or whatever community contacts folks have to get some kind of input on how the community feels about the fence. In the meantime, though, the board has directed us to ask our insurance carrier to conduct a risk analysis of that particular area, which our insurance carrier did. And they observed the situation there. And what they saw was something that had concerned the board before, certainly concerns administration, and certainly concerns many of the people in the audience tonight. And that was that there was an area next to the school where dogs were allowed to run off-leash, and it was being used as a sort of informal off-leash dog park. There had been a formal proposal in Morro Bay to establish a dog park right there, an off-leash dog park, and we had spoken at the Morro Bay City Council meeting to express, first of all, our opposition to having that there to begin with, but if there were to be a park, we would like to have had a fence there. Well, the risk analysis came forward and said, well, whether there's an off-leash dog park there or not, there are off-leash dogs there, and that's what our concern is regarding the safety of Del Mar. So with that in mind and share with you tonight, we have directed staff to put out a purchase order in order to provide a fence to provide that protection. So if that affects any of the comments that you'd like to make, that's fine. We welcome your comments and welcome you here tonight.
Gary Burton, followed by Lori Velez. Velez, sorry.
Good evening. My name is Carrie Burton from Morro Bay, and you guys all know me because I am the voice. There's tons of support behind me, and we are Parents for Safe Kids. We're a group of parents who are concerned about kids. We want to work with the school. We want to work with the district. We're gung-ho child advocates, and we're trying to get good things to happen. I just need to reiterate today how important it is that we provide safety for our children. The school does back up against the park. I understand Mr. Valentine said you guys are going to go forward with that fence, and I am overjoyed and extremely grateful. Unfortunately, I do feel that it's imperative that we try and open the lines of communication to where the next time I feel my child isn't safe or I'm uncomfortable dropping him off, it will be easier for me to come forward and it will be accepted with open arms because I had a right to be concerned. Anybody who goes to that park, and I encourage you, and stands at the park and looks at the school, there is a threat. There's 312 registered sex offenders in this county that we know of. That means there's a lot we don't know of. I'm not willing to take a chance, regardless of the statistics, that nothing has happened. I don't want to wait for something to happen. I want to be proactive, not reactive. I don't want to hurt feelings. I don't want to make it personal. I just want to keep our kids safe, because one incident is one too many in my books. And I am a mother. I had children because I love children. And
Lori Velez, how does this?
Valens.
Valens, oh, I'm sorry. And followed by Kate Bauer.
Hi, I'm Lori Valens, and I'm a secretary at Del Mar School, and I've worked there for 12 years, and I just wanted to say that it's a wonderful school, and it's very safe, and I know that the paramount interest of everyone there is safety of the children, and everyone from the principal, the teachers, everyone, custodians, all of us work towards that end. And I am concerned about the school and the district and individuals being maligned publicly and an objective viewpoint not being presented on the radio. I listened to a radio show this afternoon, and voices were stifled at times from presenting objective viewpoints, and that's not a fair situation. Not everybody. People need to be more informed, and I really hope that once the issue of the fence is behind us, that this will not become a divisive issue among us, among our community and our parents, because that would make the place unsafe rather than any other situation. A fence does not guarantee any safety completely, and we all do our best, but I think we should all work together to that end. Thank you. Thanks.
Kate Bauer, followed by Liz Bracken.
My name is Kate Bauer. I'm an employee of the district. I teach fifth grade at Del Mar. I've been affiliated with San Luis Coastal for 30 years since my first child was enrolled at Bishop's Peak. So I've been affiliated with San Luis Coastal for a long time. My comments tonight concern the fact of being a staff member at Del Mar and just vouching for the fact that we have a fabulous, fabulous staff at our school. Our utmost concern is safety for our kids, doing what we can inside and outside the classroom to help make those children successful and safe. Thoughts that I've had as I've just been thinking about what I might say, we're very concerned with good coverage at yard duty. We have teachers on their own volition coming out and just adding to the numbers of adults on campus. My principal is at yard duty just about every recess, and I don't know of anybody I've ever heard of who does that. He's very concerned with the safety of our kids. Our meetings, always the focal point of our meetings are our children, and safety is our number one concern. I just want the community to know, from a teacher's standpoint, how we feel that academics aren't all that we deliver. And we love your kids, and we take care of your kids in a lot of ways, and that's only going to increase as time goes by. Thank you.
Liz Bracken, followed by Kelly Lanini. Lanini?
Thank you. My name's Dr. Liz Bracken. I'm a veterinarian in the county for the last 18 years. I support Ms. Burton's Parents for Safe Kids proposal to put a fence around Del Mar Elementary School. I support closed campuses in general for all the schools, as I feel that this is an important safety feature to keep the kids in and all non-students out. And school personnel cannot possibly police the school perimeter adequately and should not be expected to. I would rather they put their energies into the academics, as she said.
Schallenberger does a wonderful job. Everybody there does a wonderful job, all the way down to the cute little crossing guard at the street. Love them all. However, I do have a little story I want to tell you. Many years ago, when I was leaving school one day, I was approached by a gentleman who was a flasher who did what flashers tend to do. It was the end of my school day. I was scared to death. All I could think about was getting out of there. I made it to my neighborhood. I didn't even stop. Got home, got to my neighborhood. I flagged down a police officer and told them what had just happened. The next day, of course, I had to tell the story to the school people. You know, they called me in, a group. More police officers, more students. I mean, you know, I had to go home and tell my family. I had to repeat my story over and over and over again. Lucky for me, I was old enough to understand, or more or less understand, what had happened to me and how to talk to the police. My father was a police officer, and know what was going on. Now imagine you in elementary school. You're 7, you're 8, you're 9. You're in the security of your school, your neighborhood. You forget to go potty at lunchtime because you're excited. So you ask permission, you go, and there's a stranger in the bathroom. Whether this stranger does anything or not, doesn't matter. It's somebody that you didn't expect. And you're expected to go back to your classroom. You're expected to concentrate. You're expected to finish your day. What happens if something did happen? Then you have to go and tell your parents, your teacher, the principal, the authorities. You have to repeat a story that you don't really know what happened. You don't have the words for. And if we can just keep that from happening, or at least it happening to one kid, I think we've done an amazing job with that. And like I said, lucky for me, I had words. Elementary school kids, they don't have words, and we can't expect them to have words. And we, Del Mar does a wonderful job academically, so why not just step it up a little bit and give them a little more security in their own homes, in their own neighborhoods, in their own school. Thank you.
Meredith Sweeney, followed by either or Amanda Brown / Adam Alvarez. We can't have you both at the same time, though.
name's Meredith Sweeney, and I have a son attending Del Mar Elementary School. And I just wanted to thank you for considering the fence and putting it in. And I support Carrie in her efforts 1,000%. And I will definitely feel better about sending my son to school with the fence up, knowing that he is on a secured playground. You know, it might not be 100% secure with the fence, but a lot more secure than it is right now. So I thank you, and that's about all I had to say.
Amanda Brown, followed by Adam Alvarez.
Daughter and stepson's school at Pat Beller Elementary in Paso Robles for 8 years. And my seventh year there, I was actually asked to leave the school because I did not have a background check completed, which I thought was a little extreme. But here we have one extreme to the other. I kept saying to Adam, no, you don't have the whole story. This just can't be that a school wouldn't have a fence. I'm just bewildered by that. So if I was in that situation, I would feel the same way. And I am glad that in the North County that we are have our children in a situation there where I don't have to worry quite as much when I drop them off at school of where that they are at least in a area that is secured. So that's just pretty much what I wanted to say until I got the whole thing. I was very surprised, and I don't really understand why it hasn't been done. And that's about it. So thank you.
My name is Adam Alvarez. Thanks for letting me speak. I'm friends with Carrie Burton, and I'm in full support of a fence going up.
Thank you. Where do you live?
Paso Robles.
And the other lady, where do you live? Connie Bowman, followed by Robert Bowman.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Connie Bowman. I have a grandson who's attending Del Mar School, and I want to thank you for coming up and being allowed to speak to you and for this fence going up. I'm a registered nurse, and I have been dealing with kids for the last 25 years or so, and I've seen what can happen with just one incident with a child. Our kids need to be safe, and I think this fence is going to keep them a lot safer than they would have been without it. Thank you.
Robert Bowman, followed by Eric Morgan.
First of all, I'd like to say I have no doubt at all that everybody in Del Mar School, every parent there, and so on, is totally supportive of security at that school. I think they would do anything they could to keep that school and every child there safe. I have no doubt that that was any question whatsoever. My name is Robert Bowman. I'm the grandfather of a student that goes to Del Mar Elementary School in Morro Bay. I'm here tonight to ask this board to look into and support an action to improve the security and safety at Del Mar Elementary School by proposing the construction of the fence. Since I've heard Dr. Valentine state that the fence is going to be constructed, I'm greatly appreciative. The fence itself, however, isn't a total solution to the problem. You've still got to have people there to watch children and so on. So the park that's located next to the grammar school is visited by persons that could be a danger to the children at school. Not just during school hours where these children are playing and where there are adults present on the playground, but after hours also. There's also children that play there after hours and so on.
Eric Morgan, followed by Ginger Machado.
Good evening, members of the board, distinguished guests. My name is Eric Morgan, as mentioned. I am a father of a student of Del Mar Elementary School. I live in Morro Bay. I have come here tonight in support of the measure to build the fence. And as mentioned earlier, it definitely will not cure the problem. However, it is a great deterrent. I believe that it will serve to deter people from other backgrounds, as you may have heard earlier, from accessing the school grounds during the day, and it may also assist with securing the school grounds at night from people that are there to vandalize the equipment in school and so on. I also believe that the staff at the school have done a wonderful job to this point, keeping the children secure and safe, but I believe that this will be a great tool for them as well. Anything we can do to stop this sort of thing from happening, we need to. And I can tell you from my own experience as a child, I was approached very early on in my own neighborhood, a very safe, secure neighborhood. In fact, a very close-knit neighborhood. So it can happen anywhere. It can happen anytime. And I can tell you that as somebody that has worked in the service, military service, as well as the working for the state and in private contracts for security, there's nothing we can do to actually stop this from happening. We can certainly put every effort into securing the grounds, however, and I see no other way. Under the circumstances, I see no other way. Thank you.
Ginger Machado, followed by Leslie. Oh man.
Rugebrecht.
Rugebrecht. Thank you.
President, board members, staff. My name is Ginger Machado, and I'm here from Morro Bay. I've got two daughters attending Del Mar Elementary School, and I'm here tonight to thank you for your efforts at this school district and the excellence you have been awarded in the past year. I'm here to express my thanks to the administrator, Don Schallenberger at Del Mar, and congratulate him again on the Distinguished School, as well as Administrator of the Year, and to Guy Crabb, Teacher of the Year. And I'm in agreement with everyone so far who has spoken, who acknowledges that safety is of everyone's first concern, of course. And I also realize that I am a parent with choices. And I am so grateful to Del Mar Elementary for giving me such excellent choice for educating my girls. And the opportunity that teachers have and the willingness that teachers take the kids to Del Mar Park and play for field trips to learn about creek life and environmental issues and arms. And I myself have been the odd man out on many a vote in the PTA room where my opinion wasn't the opinion held by the majority. I stated my opinion and I felt no ill will by my peers. I'm grateful to be able to voice how I feel, and I'm just thankful to have this opportunity. So thank you all for your excellence.
Leslie Rugebrecht, sorry about that, Nicole Esparza.
I agree with what everybody said also. I am an active PTA member, and I just think I welcome any of these people that have started Kids for Safety to come to the PTA meetings because we all want the same thing for our children. And I do feel like Del Mar is an extremely safe school. I volunteer there because I want to see the environment, and I want to see how the kids are, and they all seem really happy. And I just wish that a lot of the parents that are speaking for safety for kids would come to the PTA meetings and share their opinions with us, because we have a small group, and we sure would like some new ideas and could use the energy and would enjoy having them join us. So thank you.
Nicole Esparza, followed by Ann Lamont.
Good evening, Dr. Valentine and the members of the board. My name is Nicole Esparza. I'm currently a seventh grader at Las Rosas Middle School. I'm a former student of Del Mar Elementary. I attended Del Mar for 7 years. In those 7 years, I had classrooms in both upper and lower wings of the school. I used the restroom, I walked to the cafeteria, and went to the library, ran errands to the office, and played on the playground. I always felt safe. Mr. Schallenberger and all his staff see that the students are well taken care of while they're at school. During the recess, we have yard duty supervisors all over the upper and lower playgrounds, armed with radios to communicate with the office. I was never afraid. I never saw anybody I did not know or recognize on campus. The 7 years I played on the playground, I never saw anyone, even campus enter campus during recess. All of my friends and myself were taught never to leave the campus during school hours. The only way to leave the campus is being called to the office by the secretary and signed out by your parent or guardian. The student known that Del Mar Park is off limits during school time unless it is a class field trip. Students participate in fire drills, earthquake drills, bus evacuation drills. We are taught about stranger danger. And as for the people with dogs, they will probably find their way through Del Mar, whether there is a fence or not. The real problem is people worried about kids being safe. Fence at Del Mar isn't the problem. Del Mar Park is a safe school. Del Mar School is safe. People should worry about kids walking home after school or maybe who they're hanging around with. Maybe grown-ups should see all the great things Del Mar is. It isn't a fence. It is a great school, a safe school. Thank you for your time.
Invite people to come to PTA meetings through our newsletters, through people, just contacting folks out as they're waiting for their children to say, why don't you come to a meeting or would you like to help on a fundraiser? And I would just love to bottle the energy that she has for this forum here to get involved with the fundraising at our school and to support all the great things that Del Mar does. And I just thank all of you, school board members and superintendent and staff and all the teachers and staff of Del Mar for the wonderful job that they do, and they should be grandly recognized. Thank you.
Carrie Friend, followed by Mike Burton.
My name is Carrie Friend. I live in Cayucas. Although my daughter does not go to your school, to me that's irrelevant. I'm concerned about safety for kids. My head's kind of spinning right now because everything that I wanted to say is kind of a moot point now because you're putting up the fence, and I don't know if you can hear that or not, but I appreciate that. As far as the PTA coming to meetings, I don't see how Carrie's going to the PTA could have created a fence. And it's unfortunate all this work had to be so difficult to get there. I was doing some research, and the United States Department of Justice has a Office of Justice Programs, and I want to read you a paragraph of what they said, or paraphrase a little bit. It starts out by saying the past 30 to 40 years, most schools didn't have to be fenced or didn't need to be, okay, but times have changed. It says, for those schools with campuses, fencing is usually important to control entry onto the school grounds. It is important that schools and communities recognize that enclosing a campus with fencing is more to keep outsiders out than to keep insiders in. Controlling campus entry requires fencing or other physical barriers. Now, if the Department of Justice feels this is important, whether a seventh grader doesn't think it's important, whether a secretary or another teacher doesn't think it's important, the Department of Justice does. And I think they're a little bit, I hold them a little bit higher. And I'm a teacher myself. I'm not saying that I don't trust teachers. I teach at Cal Poly and Cuesta. But if the Department of Justice is so into having a fence, I think that we need to take notice. And again, I appreciate the fact that you are going to do that. I was also looking at Megan's Laws, as well as the 312 sex offenders in the county. There's 14 in Morro Bay, and 2 are in violation. We have no idea where they are. Okay, so they could be hanging out at the park. They could not be. You just have no idea. I'm happy that Dr. Valentine, said there's not been a major issue to date. That's great. Let's keep it that way. A fence would only keep it that way. Another, I can't remember if it was a teacher who mentioned, maybe it was Ginger, taking the kids to the park. That's great. Put a gate in the fence. But those kids were escorted there. They were supervised. I can't tell you that my first grader is not going to see a park and go, woohoo, and run off. These are first graders, and they're in their mind, they're thinking, let's go play. So it's possible they could take off, and the fence will alleviate that. And I'm sure the staff is great, although I don't have firsthand experience. My daughter doesn't go there. Regardless of how all this transpired, the safety of children is the main goal, and Parents for Safe Kids is here to stay. Thank you.
Don Schallenberger, follow Mr. Burton, and then Don Schallenberger.
My name is Mike Burton. Carrie Burton's my wife. I was born in San Luis. Truly, deeply concerned about the safety, the atmosphere between just two different ways the grass is mowed is the boundary between a public park and a school ground. And that's her concern. So I think she's been pretty happy with the school. I haven't heard her had any really major complaints with the staff as far as any of their attitudes or anything like that. I don't know what else. I'm glad to see this hopefully come to an end, though. Thank you very much.
Let's see. Are we going to...
Well, from my point of view, Don Schallenberger, I'm the principal at Del Mar. This has been a really exciting evening, and I've loved hearing every comment that was made, and there are gold nuggets in every presentation, and I take them to heart. I'd like to just read a little note that I wrote and some things that I thought about during the session here. Del Mar has worked hard to become a lighthouse school, a school where children are not only academically challenged at every level, but a school that serves as a safe harbor for all those at risk, a sanctuary for those who may come to us from a childhood with varied and challenging backgrounds. Every child has adults at Del Mar that will shepherd him or her, watch over them, and guide them towards success. We do care about kids, and we do want them to be safe. In fact, I did not invite my staff to come tonight. They came because they'd heard the radio program, and they kind of knew what was going on, and they felt like they needed to be here to explain how they felt about our school, and that and they've worked really hard to make our school safe. We have a full contingent of staff on supervision before school, during school, and recesses and lunch and after school. We do have working surveillance cameras, which were work ordered a year and a half ago and installed last spring. We have signs on the bathroom, and staff members have gone out of their way to be vigilant and make their presence visible to parents and students. We also have a new system to screen and monitor volunteers. We do have a fence on both sides of the property, but we do not have a fence between the park and the school. We, school staff, parents, and superintendent, are not, nor have we ever been, opposed to a fence. I'm going to repeat that. We have never been opposed to a fence. We have had a wonderful working partnership with the city of Morro Bay and have always had access to the park for special occasions. And this has gone on for, I don't know if it's 40 years, but it's close to it. And our students are not allowed to go to the park except on supervised field trips or picnics. And they're trained. That's a training that we give our kids before they go on the playground, when they come to our school, if they're new students, or if they're kindergartners graduating to sixth grade, or to first grade, I'm sorry. At the end of the kindergarten year, the kindergarten teachers take their kids out on the field and they train them and show them where the boundaries are. We have a lot of, we are on the road in the right direction. I believe the issue here tonight is not so much about a fence, although that's the talking point, but I believe the issue is about the change process, a process that's acted out all across America and the world every day. It is a process which can be done in the spirit of goodwill without demeaning anyone. For a community that has worked extremely hard to make Del Mar a safe harbor for students, a California distinguished school, we will continue to move on the road in the direction of safe schools. And I welcome everybody's input. I just ask that they use the process that's in place. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a request from board members for some board comments. I would ask that you make them comments, not questions, please, and that you limit your comments because we do have a full agenda and we do need to move on.
And we have other speakers
for public comment as well, so we really do need to move on. Please make your comments. I would ask brief.
I will change my question to a comment then, because I had a question. I really, really thank you all. This has been beautiful. I had the hairs on the nape of my neck rise up, that even though there's some feuding going out there a little bit here and a little bit there, you're all united under one umbrella, and that's beautiful. And the energy here, if we could get you guys to come periodically and get into other things, this is the first time we've had more than 15, 20 people here in a long time. One thing that, Carrie, thank you for all the information. You got me so concerned that I actually dragged my husband out there one Sunday, a week ago Sunday, and we walked all over campus. And, of course, I've been on the campus before, but didn't notice that there was a fence. I knew that on one side, and another falling over fence on the other side. Walked over, decided to go all the way through the park because I'd never been in the park before, and what a lovely little park. Walked into the park, and in the first couple of minutes, there were three dogs off leash. And that, in my thinking, I have two big dogs. That's a no-no anywhere, unless it's an off-leash park. And but anyhow, went through the park and walked around. The bathrooms were all working. I was concerned about that. Came back, and actually, in walking back, my husband said, "What is the traffic? Where do the people come?" Oh, thank you. Was it a cricket? Oh, God.
I didn't want to startle you.
Thank you. Thank you. Somebody talked about taking classes for the creepy crawlies. And I love that. The creepy crawlies. I can't ask you what those are, but I'd really like to know what the creepy crawlies that you guys go on a field trip. Anyway, we walked through, and when we got back, my husband said, "Look, turn around and look." And I did. And this was the first time that it occurred to me. There were the houses down this way. Here is the park up there. What's the easiest way for anybody to get through to that park is across the...
I'm fencing, but no gates. You know, we don't have an identity code. We don't have cops at the gate checking ID or anything. When the specter of child molestation was raised, that's fear-mongering. And it's completely unnecessary to this conversation. When you name your group Parents for Safe Kids, all the other folks who aren't members of Parents for Safe Kids, well, I guess we're not for safe kids. I mean, the rhetoric got so overblown. We do not rely on fencing for the safety of our children at any of our school sites. We rely on dedicated, committed staff like we have at Del Mar Elementary. We have joint use agreements with the City of San Luis Obispo, with Morro Bay, and who else? For the use of
the county, well.
Yeah, to use our facilities. We have joint park use agreements. Part of the idea is to have a school be like a park and have a park to be accessible to our schools and our students. The fence really isn't the issue. I agree with Mr. Schallenberger. It's really how this whole thing got blown out of proportion. I mean, frankly, I couldn't give a hang about whether dogs can be off leashes or not. It's just not my thing. I don't want dogs running around without leashes on near children. And so I think it's fine that we're going to put this fence up. It bothers me that the impression, at least by some of the speakers out there, is we're putting this fence up because of this fear-mongering that went on with child molestation. Really resent that. So, yes, we're going to go ahead and put a fence up, but it's a false sense of security if you think that fence is going to make your child safer. What makes children safer are committed teachers and staff and parents and guardians who watch their children.
Just real quickly, I do want to thank everyone for coming also, and I want everyone in the community to always feel you can come and talk to the school board, and we're glad that you came. I do want to say, in the interest of accuracy, which I really believe in on reporting, that we were given a copy of this Department of Justice document I believe that's what we were given. And there was a paragraph in there that says there are some schools in remote locations where fencing is not indicated. So I want to make sure that we're not giving an impression that they think all schools need to have fences and major security. It's only determined by, you know, the environment and the surroundings, just to make that clear. I think that's all I needed to say, but I do commend the staff, too, for a wonderful job that you do. And, again, welcome all for coming.
Mr. Millar, do we have other public comment?
We do indeed, Mr. President. We have John Calandro, and he will be followed by Christina Stamford.
Good evening, and thank you for letting me speak this evening. I'm John Calandro. I live over in the Laguna Lake area, just north of the junior high school. And people in our neighborhood are here tonight to address a safety concern as well, having nothing to do with fences. Having to do with, I think you mentioned, joint use permits with the city. We've noticed a concern for my children out playing. So I don't know if we need to ask the school board or if we need to ask the city rec department or if we need to go to both, but we would like this to be addressed, that when use permits are given out for sporting events, that people are asked to use the school parking lot. They're not using it because it is more convenient to go to the lower fields. And if we have to go to the rec department to address that issue as well, I think the people in our neighborhood are more than happy to do it. But it has caused parking and safety issues in our neighborhood. So thank you.
Christina Stamford, followed by Jan May.
Hi, I'm Christina Stamford, and thank you so much for your time. I live right on the corner of Descanso and Vista Calados, and so we're right behind Laguna Middle School. And I have two young children. You probably heard them making noise in the back for a little while there. And
we really want new students in our district,
yeah,
so feel free.
We're trying to bring them in young, you know, really get them used to the school. But my main concern is for my children, the neighborhood children, and then the young athletes that use the school. And it's just so dangerous on our street because of the high volume at certain points in the day. At 4 o'clock when the parents are dropping the kids off, there's a lot of traffic. Then they're parking, they're double parking. And, you know, that's the time that, you know, a lot of the kids in the neighborhood come out, use the backfield, and because there's so many cars that are parked right next to each other, it's so easy for a young child, even the athletes, to come darting between the cars and get hit by a car. And that's my main concern for being here. And it's so easy for the parents to park up at the Los Osos or at the Laguna Middle School parking lot. They just, you know, I noticed they redid the parking lot at the middle school so it can handle the high volume of traffic that the sports participants bring to the backfield. So, you know, I hope that you help us achieve that goal in redirecting the parents to park in the parking lot rather than in our residential neighborhood. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Jan May, followed by Keith Kidwell.
Thank you for hearing our concerns this evening. Yes, it has become quite a difficult problem. We lived in this house on Vista Calados, which is the last house in the cul-de-sac at the very back of the school there, for almost 30 years now. So we've watched it progress to be a very serious problem over the years, in particular the last few years. So it's not just a soccer problem. It's become a soccer problem, a baseball problem, a football problem, a year-round problem. So it's not just, you know, an isolated problem. But over the years, it's becoming increasingly more of a problem. And we've come to try and resolve the problems ourselves as a neighborhood over the years in trying to ask the parents to please be respectful of our neighborhood, only to be approached with obscenities, which is not good for the students. We've asked the coaches to please perhaps, you know, ask the parents to, you know, be given notices and so on. Which has only been a temporary fix, and it's not been a long-term fix for us at all. We've gone to the school to ask them to
please find some kind of resolution, which has not been working at all. It's just been a lot of lip service for us. So thus, we've come to this point to you asking for a resolution here. We've even, over the years, asked the police to come out to ticket the people as a deterrent, only to have the police come and watch the game because their child was participating in the game. And we've even had police come and become part of the problem in that they're all double parking, which is added to the problem. We've had a fire truck was the last problem in that they actually double parked in the cul-de-sac blocking our driveway, and we had to literally ask them to move the fire truck so that we could get out of our driveway. So therein lies our problem. So they weren't any help at all. So we've done all these numerous things and been promised a lot of things, and nothing has worked so far. So, and it's becoming worse and worse. It's becoming destroying our property, and, you know, it's become overrun with and overpacked with speeding cars and so on and so forth.
If you could wrap up, please.
You bet. So, actually, thank you. So we're just asking for a resolution from you and just asking you to kind of restrict, you know, what those parking permits would be, you know, when you issue those permits.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Keith Kidwell and then Mark Buckman.
Like they've been saying, we've been trying to be pretty proactive with this situation.
My name is Keith Kidwell. Okay. On the front of it right away is a letter that was sent to Dr. Valentine back in May asking that the neighborhood would like to meet with the school board to address this issue because we're having a constant problem. In one weekend, I can count 225 cars passing this cul-de-sac. In this packet is pictures that I'll show you that are in there of the constant problem. I can't come home and park in my own street. There will be people double parked to pick kids up. They use it as a primary drop-off and pickup for all the sporting activities constantly. This is a daily problem. And then on the weekends when there's a tournament, you can start from 7 o'clock in the morning till 7 at night, and you will not park anywhere in front of our house because they use all the residential parking. And then when they're picking up and dropping off kids, they use that as a primary pickup and drop-off for all sporting activities. So we are asking that the school board put in the permit, a mechanism that lets these sporting groups know that that is not their primary place. Like I said, we've gone out. I've talked to the coaches. I have talked to every single person I can constantly when it's there. Could you please, you can have the site on the school, the property that goes on the school, you can use that for handicap, whatever you want. But the residents have no place to park. And in a cul-de-sac, you don't have. There's pictures in there. There's a motorcycle parking area. They'll park straight into that, get out of the vehicle, and walk away. There's pictures in there of where they just double park, get out and walk away and leave it. Well, you can't even go in and turn around. On tournaments, on weekends, they'll bring motorhomes in. There's a picture in the motorhome with a pop-out. He's parked along the street with his pop-out out. And, it, you know, you've got pictures in there of when they're dropping their kids off. There's 15, 20 vehicles dropping kids off and another 100 behind them wanting to get out of there, and you've got kids running back and forth. If I come home to my house, I live, there's a map in there that kind of has an overview of the area because it shows the sports fields, where the school parking lot is, so you can understand why they want to use that as their primary unloading, loading, and et cetera. But I can't get within 15 houses of my own house to park because everybody's picking up and dropping off. I have to leave vehicles in front of my house so that when I get home, I actually have a vehicle, if I have to put it down, I live on the lakefront, that I can put in my backyard to have another one go out. So I really have just the two in my driveway or in my garage. Now, heaven forbid, I want to go to the store and move that vehicle that's out front to go to the store, because in order to do that, I have to take one out of the driveway and stick it out on the street, because the minute I pull out, there's somebody in that spot. Now, my daughter's car, my son's car, there's pictures in there where the lady is actually, the bumpers on both these vehicles are smashed and beat up. And it's because of people trying to park. There's pictures in there where they're halfway in, halfway out. They won't park in the street. But if they got room to put an SUV where a Volkswagen should be, they'll fit it in. beat up the vehicles, and then they leave. So it's property damage. There is in there a request, a permit, that all the citizens, all the residents have signed, that we walked around on Labrisas, Vista Coladas, Descanso. Every single parent and person that lives in these houses is willing right now to put money for litigation and hire a lawyer. And I've already talked to one about what's it going to take to finally get this to stop. And I've got a lawyer that doesn't go to this town, doesn't like this school district, is more than happy to take it on. So I'm really asking you people to help us with this.
Okay. You know, I'd prefer not. And actually, I'd prefer it if you could kind of wrap up, because I know Mr. Millar has a comment, and I believe we've heard. You know, I'm trying to prevent that right now.
But at any rate, my number's on there. The residents, we could be talked to anytime. We have tried real hard with letters and everything to get with the board and come to solution with this, with the sporting association that runs it. Our process is really get it
Thank
out.
You. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Millar, did you?
Perhaps the president could speak with Mrs. Dickinson.
Yeah, Mrs. We can do that.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. I asked to be able to make a comment because I live on Vista del Lago, on the other side of Vista Coladas. And I wish the other group were still here, because when I moved from across the street from C.L. Smith, I moved to down the street from Laguna Middle School. And I would like to commend Brad Parker and Mr. Millar for the improvement in the drop-off parking situation that we used to have there. And a couple of other things. I'm a former police officer, and I'm a lawyer, and even though I do like the school district and everything, I'm not sure what your lawyer would use as a cause of action against our school district in this. Here's what I'd like to suggest that we do about this, and part of it's you're going to be your responsibility, and don't give up. You pay taxes for a police department. If you've got a camper with a pop-out parked on a street, you keep calling that dispatcher until they send a cop out there to write a ticket or tow those people away. If they're blocking your driveway, you do the same thing. You have no right to the parking spaces in front of your house. It's a difficult thing for people to accept, but it is what it is. You have to hold the police accountable for policing the neighborhood. And you do that by calling. You don't call 911, you call the business number. And you keep calling, and if you don't get a response, then you go to a sergeant. If you don't get a response from the sergeant, you go to a captain, you go, or a lieutenant, then to Bart Topham, whoever you need to talk to down there. I guarantee you Deb Lindham will.
We have.
Okay. Keep doing it. Okay, this is my turn. You get elected to the school board, you get to sit up here. Believe me, it's only one of the few benefits. And questionable at best. The other issue is we will incorporate in our permitting process the advisory to these leagues. We are permitting the league to use our facilities. We're not able to control the participants or their families or the ill manners or whatever. I mean, the adult soccer league that shows up down there on Sundays sometimes drive me crazy. I report it, too. I call the police about everything. They know who I am. And I know it's frustrating. I know you don't always get a response, but that's your number one hammer. Any of you guys know Pete Hubbard? He lives in our neighborhood, Sergeant Pete Hubbard. Find his address and start banging on him, too. So I think we should do that, where we work through our permitting process. The other aspect of it has to do with just trying to get the word out to parents. Most parents, I think, are considerate. There are some events where the parking lot is full, and I run into that sometimes. What I love, and I'm sure you guys see it, too, somebody cuts down Laguna Lane, they get to Vista del Lago, they make the left, they think they're going to get around to Vista Colada. They go. I hear them go down to the end. I know I can time them. About 30 seconds later, they'll be back the other way. So your problems are real. I acknowledge that. You keep working with the police. We'll start with the good work of Dr. Valentine and Mr. Millar. We'll work on the police end of it as well. I will caution you about one thing that I've learned over the years. When you complain about speeding on Los Osos Valley Road, and they set up radar, and you're coming home one day and you're running a little late, so be careful what you wish for. I understand the problem. I know it's a serious problem, and we will take it seriously, but we can't do it all. Don't expect us to be able to cure it, but we'll do what we can. You keep working on the law enforcement end, and we'll work on it too.
Mrs. Dickinson, do you have a comment?
My quick comment is that I live in a neighborhood that set up a neighborhood parking district. And I was personally in favor of it, but we all went to city council. And I think city council is where you really should go, because then you're going to have permits to park there. And city council will help you with that. And then when you call the police, they have a reason to act. So go to city council is my...
And is the board interested in finding out through our permitting process if we can encourage people to park responsibly in that area?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
And then so we would direct staff to look into that for us and see if there's any way we can help the community with that.
That's good.
Okay.
Last but not least, Mr. President, Mark Buckman.
Mr. Buckman, how? Last but definitely not least.
Summarize everything.
You got 3 minutes.
I got 3 minutes. Okay. Thank you very much for letting me speak tonight. My name is Mark Buckman. I'm here tonight representing the 24th District PTA. I am secretary and have been on the board of the county PTA for the past 5 years. District PTA represents 6,500 families, and I am very excited tonight to announce that we are working with Mr. Anderson at Laguna Junior High to bring the Department of Justice iSafe program. There will be an FBI agent to come and talk about children's safety on the internet, especially MySpace.com. There will be two events. As I know the dates right now, they are October 15th at 6 p.m. and January 18th with not a time set. And Mr. Anderson is opening the school up to anybody in the community who would like to come. Hundreds of children a day are approached by what I loosely call adults on the internet. And if your child has access to a computer, those people have access to your child. So I wish some of these folks that were concerned about children's safety were still here. The second thing I'd like to talk about is a little more uplifting. The 24th District PTA will be continuing the Reflections Contest, which we revived last year. We are working with Arts Obispo, which was the old Slo County Arts Council, and I'm trying to expand that to all the children in the county. And so two new areas that will be allowed in the contest will be dance and film. So it's going to be very exciting. Last year we did the art contest at Cal Poly. We're looking possibly at the Oddfellows Hall, possibly going back to Cal Poly. But it was a very exciting event, and so you'll all be invited to that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. How many minutes do I get? October
14
October 15th at 6 p.m. at Laguna Junior High. And January 18th, and I don't have a time on that. And this is Mr. Anderson, I think, was very visionary, and I think the PTA has already spent about a year and a half working with law enforcement and others in the community to bring iSafe into this community.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Okay, let's move on. We did reports by student representatives. Are there any reports by school staff? Seeing none, move on to status of the state budget. Mr. Miller.
Thank you very much. Just a quick update on our legislative process and the trailer bills that are part of the statewide budget adoption. And they have landed on the governor's desk, and we hope that they're going to bring some clarity to some of the things that were in his proposals. I'm not going to read them all to you, but I will highlight a couple. The before and after school program, this bill would implement the voter-approved Prop 49 of 2002 and make changes to existing before and after school programs. Among its many provisions, the bill includes an increase in the per-pupil funding day rate from $5 to $7.50. So that's a significant increase in that piece. Our career technical education programs, specifically ROPs, it will encourage the revising the requirements to include a sequence of academic and skill instruction and requiring school districts that have not completed specific course development to enter into a corrective action plan with the California Department of Education. English learners are being addressed with a, in terms of our testing, if you're an English learner who is literate in your primary language or who receives instruction in your primary language, you will take your standards-based assessments in the student's primary language as soon as the tests are available. School district governance, the landmark bill that restructures the governance of LA Unified has been passed and sent to the governor. It presents a rather complex set of rules and circumstances for LA Unified to further attempt to get out of its program improvement issues, and we'll see how that part works.
I would suggest that bill will be litigated almost immediately.
That one and the next one, too, Prop 98, and both for the same reason. They're very unworkable and ill-conceived pieces of legislation that don't present very clear guidance to those who are trying to implement. But remember,
is this a new Prop 98, not the venerable Prop 98?
It is. It's the old one.
Is there a pending ballot measure regarding that?
No.
Okay.
I misunderstood. It's a bill. Let me go and I'll bring clarity to a murky issue. Maybe. $2.9 billion that the governor stole from us, and CTA and Jack O'Connell sued the governor, and they made a settlement. The parties to the lawsuit have the right to negotiate the outcome of their lawsuit. So CTA was the driving force. And the Prop 98 settlement of $2.9 billion establishes that programs for decile 1, 2, and 3 schools will be established that will reduce class size reduction for 4, 5, and 6. We don't have any. But it is our money that they're going to send to decile 1, 2, and 3 schools to do class size reduction in 4th, 5th, and 6th grade. If you remember, the class size reduction issues of 1, 2, kindergarten through 3 established that the primary problem was facilities. How do you house one half, again, as more students in classrooms? And they give you $500 per classroom in order to address that issue. And we're talking about a portable that's going to cost us $150,000 at a minimum. It's an unworkable issue. It's a lot of money on something that's yet to be proven that has a significant impact. Special ed issues. The bill would require the superintendent of public instruction with input from higher education, the legislature, and others to convene an advisory committee to develop recommendations identifying the means by which public and non-public schools, including charter schools, can better serve the educational needs of pupils with autism. So they're going to convene a study group for autism. And then a special ed bill will extend the current provisions exempting pupils with disabilities from the requirements of passing the California High School Exit Exam as a condition of receiving a high school diploma. The state budget bill that brings a lot of clarity, including how the arts, music, and physical fitness programs will work, professional development, and the funding formula and personnel requirements for the high school counseling program, which we've all been waiting for excitedly. That's just a few of the bills that the two major ones, of course, are the the Prop 98 and the clarity for school district governance from LA Unified. So the rest of them are just implementation issues that we will bring back to you details as we begin to read the bills.
Do we know whether the governor has signed or vetoed the bill that would require that would make a requirement for an investigation of charter schools' effect on the financial health of school districts?
The audit procedure, that one has not hit the radar screen yet. I don't know if he signed it yet or not.
Okay, let's move on to item number 3, or I'm assuming we're ready for that. District test results in language arts, mathematics, and district accountability progress report. Some good news there, Dr. Matakovich.
Yes, very good news. I'm proud to report to you, President Unger and members of the board, our district test results. Our students took the state test battery in spring of 06, consisting of the content standards test in the core academic areas and the California Achievement Test, commonly referred to as the CAT-6. The results are available with this item, and you have them in your board book. These results are the basis for our District Accountability Progress Report, including the California Academic Performance Index, the API, and the federal NCLB, No Child Left Behind, measure of adequate yearly progress. I'd like to start with the first measure, which is content standards tests. They are specifically derived from the state academic standards. Descriptors are assigned to various performance levels: advanced, proficient, basic, below basic, and far below basic. Our percentages of students falling into each of these categories for language arts and math are included with this item. I'd like to note that we've reached all-time highs in language arts in grades second grade at 61% proficient and advanced, grade 6 at 68%, grade 7 at 67%, and grade 8 at 65%. In mathematics, we're at an all-time high in grade 5 with 69% proficient in advance. And we show increasing numbers of our students taking algebra in the 8th grade, geometry in the 9th grade, and algebra 2 in the 10th grade.
Excuse me, Mary. Do we have a copy of that
In your packet?
What page? Do you know? I'm not able to. We're both looking for it.
3.3? Yes. I'm sorry, Mr. Botwin, that's coming in a minute or two in my presentation. So I'm basically referring to the content standards now, of which you have the tables in front of you. Yes, correct. Excuse me. I should have cued Russell a little bit on that. Excuse me. So the second measure is the CAT-6 test. It's a nationally normed test. And this means it was given to a representative national sample group at the time the test was developed. Results are shared in national percentiles. Last year, this test battery was given only to grades 3 and 7. The results are presented show our students within the range of previous years. Our 7th graders scored at the 61% national percentile in reading and 65th in mathematics. This means our average 7th grader did better than 61% of the national percent of the national sample group in reading and better than 65% in mathematics. Our students are doing very well, and we're on the road to doing better, as you'll see from our District Accountability Progress Report. This report measures us under 4 requirements, which establishes our adequate yearly progress targets. The first requirement is participation rate on the statewide assessments in both English language arts and math. The state target is 95%. We have had an overall participation rate of 98% in English language arts, and in mathematics, a 99 percentile rate. Our students with disabilities, the subgroup, did not meet the 95% requirement. We had a 90% rate for our students with disabilities. The No Child Left Behind Act has always required students who take the tests with modifications to not be counted when calculating the participation rate. In the past, our state has repeatedly challenged this rule. Up until 2006, NCLB had waived their enforcement of this rule due to our challenge. However, beginning in 06, in 2006 reporting process, students with disabilities who take the state test, that's the STAR and the high school exit exam, with modifications, are counted as being enrolled, but are no longer counted as having taken the test. Hence, our drop in participation rate of our students with disabilities. Requirement 2 deals with percent proficient on the statewide assessments. The target is English language art at the 23% range, and in mathematics, 23.7%. District-wide, we are at 66.9% in English language arts, and in mathematics, 67.1% in math. We met this requirement with all subgroups except for our English learners, who reached 18.7% proficient rate in English language arts. We did not meet our target in English language arts, therefore, but we would like to note that as we look at our three-year trend district-wide in all of our subgroups, we are clearly improving in many cases, except for this one. Requirement three, Academic Performance Index, the API. The target is 590, or 1 point growth. We met this target with a score of 820, with a 2 point gain over last year. Did a good job in that requirement area. And last but not least, the requirement, the graduation rate. This indicator is set at 82.9%, and our rate was 94.6%. So we made this target. The good news is that we met the challenge of moving our students' proficiency performance level. That all went up. We are increasing our percentage of students proficient. This is due to the focused work of our principals and our teachers who have had their students' performance profiles to guide their instruction. As you know, every classroom teacher has their students' individual results, and they are developing their instructional plans using these results. Our strategic plan, which focuses our resources on our English learners, our students with disabilities, and our socioeconomic disadvantaged students, will result, we're sure, in more students demonstrating proficiency. We can assure you that this is our focus. Shortly, we'll be getting direction from the state and the federal government about our status as a program improvement district because we have not met two of the 28 criteria. That is having 95% of our students with disabilities participate and having 23% of our English learners proficient or above. We will be in year three of program improvement. But please know we're not discouraged. As I stated earlier, our three-year trends show we're making gains across the board. And we have a plan. You reviewed our plan at the end of last year. And with the assistance of the County Office of Ed as our external evaluator, we will keep you informed as to our work. So our plan is focused, and we hope to continue our improvement trend. And I want to thank you for your commitment to the students and the staff of our school district by supporting our strategic plan.
Okay, great. Any board comments? Mrs. Dickinson and Mrs. Bowen.
I have so much to say about this. My mind is a jumble, but I want to congratulate Dr. Mitakovich and Dr. Valentine and all the teachers and staff and principals and everyone who's done such a stellar job of educating students, and the scores are very impressive. The part that I resent is the federal government setting up impossible situations for us that are counterproductive to our own goals to educate our students. I mean, it makes you want to have a Declaration of Independence or line up, you know, civil disobedience or something when you're set into situations like this, such as students with disabilities not counting as having taken a test when they have taken a test with the modifications in their, you know, legal individual education plans. I mean, that's just an impossible setup. We are set up. Let's face it. We are set up by the federal government to fail. And even though we're, you know, achieving at a stellar rate, when you're set up, you're set up. And it makes me mad. So congratulations to the district, though, and just keep your chins up and barge ahead.
I second much of what Adrienne says, but I do have a question about the content standards math. And if you'll come along with me, we'll look first at page 311 and then the next two pages. And on page 311, under the FBBA, if you look down to, and this I understand, my algebra and geometry are almost negligible. So I'm fully there, but that's why I noticed it, I think, because I'm so bad. Grade 9 Algebra 1, if you look, there's a big discrepancy between our low and up to basic group, 72 for Grade 9 Algebra 1 in 2002, versus the PA is 28. And if you go down that list, though, we end up with 2006, we have 73 versus 28. So we have a much larger group that needs help, that needs concentrated. And if you look at grade 10, it's the same thing, 87 to 13, overwhelmingly number of far below, below, and basic versus proficient and advanced. Down to the last one, 2006, grade 10, 79 versus 20. Well, it came up a little bit there on the 20. Same thing on the next one. Next page, same thing, 312. And if we look at grade 10 geometry, and I started with an A in my high school year, and I finished with a C minus, because I brought in some spring flowers for a special display. Grade 10, we have the same thing, 60-40 in 2002 down to 72, which is a little significant improvement, versus 28. That has come up a little bit. Grade 11. And then the last one on page 313, grade 11, Algebra 2. We have the same thing. If you look at those numbers, the proficient advanced, 16, and 2004, 7, and 2005, 14, and so on. And at the very bottom, grade 11, summative math, 53 versus 47. They're almost balanced there. What can we do with these kids to make them more proficient in the math?
Well, first of all, maybe I can just respond to some of the statistics. Algebra 1 is an eighth grade course, and so the vast majority of students who take Algebra 1 do so in the eighth grade, and as you can see, 64% of those kids are at proficient or advanced, compared to 36 that aren't. When you get beyond the eighth grade, you're dealing with a much smaller subset of Algebra 1 students, and they are exclusively those students who, for one reason or another, are a year behind, 2 years behind, or 3 years behind in mathematics. And you see the percentages of proficiency drop dramatically at that level. So when you get into ninth grade algebra, you're dealing with that subset. 28% of those kids do become proficient, but the rest don't. You go to the third year, which is grade 10, and another 20% of those kids become proficient, but the rest don't. And when you get to grade 11, and again, we're talking about somebody who is 4 years behind in mathematics at that point, 9% of those kids become proficient. So the point that we're making here is that we are intervening in the lives of kids that are struggling in mathematics, and we're having some success actually with those kids. The total number of students who are proficient in algebra is a pretty respectable number.
Thank you. I will make an uncharacteristically brief comment. The most depressing thing I'd heard out of Washington in a while, and there's been a few things, is the Secretary Spelling pronouncing that the No Child Left Behind Act needs no revision, that it's apparently in perfect condition. So I'm not optimistic that we'll anytime soon be set up for failure, or stop being set up for failure, as Adrian pointed out.
Just one question about, you know, algebra. Is algebra really appropriate for every student that we shouldn't forget about? I mean, that's a hovering question there. There may be some math skills for some students that might be more useful than algebra for some students.
Well, don't we have a state requirement that students pass Algebra 1 in order to get their high school diploma?
Yes,
okay. All right. Mrs. Roger.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask the question. I can't recall. In the ninth grade, we have a 20-to-1 ratio. Is it in English language arts or mathematics? Both. Are we seeing, do we have enough years under our belt yet to see if there's a real benefit to having the smaller class size in the ninth grade there?
I think the existence of these tests came in after we had 20-to-1. We really don't have a control group to compare them to at this point.
Okay.
Class size has not
So this reflects at least 3 years.
Right.
Or more. We've had 20-to-1.
Yeah, class size has not been shown to have a dramatic effect on student achievement, which is one of the concerns about the budget piece that Russell just shared, that billions of dollars going to go into class size reduction in 4 through 6. Lots of jobs produced, but not sure how much achievement is produced.
Thank you.
All right. Seeing no further comments, thank you very much. We can move on to item number 4, which is a resolution number 020607, offer of district land for sale to public entities, vacant Fairview School site. And I would remind everybody that that's the site at the old Toro Creek. Mr. Parker?
Following up on the board's direction to staff to proceed with the sale of the property, first step is to pass a resolution in which we make a special notice to a list of public agencies that the property is available. They get, in a sense, first dibs on the property. If they're not interested, or if they are interested and we're unable to agree upon a price, then we would come back to the board in 60 days or thereabouts and request another resolution to make offer of the property to the general public. So this is that first resolution.
Move resolution, approval of resolution 020607.
We have a motion and by Mr. Millar and a second by Mrs. Botwin. Any discussion? Yes, thank you. Any discussion or on this? Any public comment? Mr. Peter.
In the public process, how do you arrive at a price? Is that a private negotiation, or is it an open bidding process with public agencies?
With public agencies, it's a negotiated price, and it would be a price that the school board felt comfortable with. We do have an appraisal on the property, which gives us a range of value, but it would be entirely up to the board to decide that they are, in fact, comfortable with the price that has been offered or negotiated.
What was the appraisal value?
Can you tell us what the appraised value was? It was about
$15,000 to $25,000.
Okay. Thank you. Other
Brianna,
questions?
The cost of the appraisal?
The cost of the
Do you remember?
Almost $5,000.
Yeah.
You know, I don't recall, and I hate to quote, but I'm thinking in the $1,500 range.
I'm thinking more in the $4,500 range.
I hope not. I don't recall.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from the board? Okay. Seeing none, I believe, Mrs. Holmes, is this not a roll call vote?
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Botwin?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Let's do it.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson?
Yes.
Mr. Peter?
Yes.
Passes 6-0.
Okay, Mr. Parker, don't go far because we're now on to item number 5, enrollment projections, demographic study overview 2006 to 2025. This is a very interesting study, so thank you.
And I believe the board received this report a few weeks ago in your Friday update. Perhaps you've had a chance to digest it. I thought that I would just hit some of the significant points that I extracted from the report. And go over those briefly. One thing to recall is that enrollment by geographic area, counts of students who live in an attendance area can be significantly different than the counts of students who attend the school in that area. Mm-hmm. We transfer a lot of students to our magnet schools. We have intra-district transfer, which allows students to cross out of their boundaries. So as you digest the report, it's important to keep in mind that the students who reside in an area may not be the same as the count of the students who attend the school in the area. Some significant points that came out, one is that we didn't see any significant changes from the last time this report was done. Mm-hmm. It's been polished and fine-tuned a little bit more based upon current circumstances. We expect to see a lot of growth in the southern part of San Luis Obispo over the next 20 years with the number of developments that are going in. The first of our schools which will likely be affected by that enrollment growth is Hawthorne. And if not by 07-08, then I think most assuredly you'll see some increases in enrollment for Hawthorne by the following year, 08-09. And as you project further in time, you see that the residents of that area more than double by the year 2015. So we anticipate that we're going to have to make some changes in order to accommodate that enrollment growth. Similarly, Sinsheimer is also going to be impacted by the proposed housing developments. And although it's on a time frame which is stretched out a bit further, it's going to be impacted, and we think we're going to have to make some accommodations in order to deal with that growth. The four schools that support the southern part of San Luis Obispo currently are C.L. Smith, Los Ranchos, Sinsheimer, and Hawthorne. They're not all within walking distances of the new development, but they are the closest schools that could absorb the growth. And were we able to divide students perfectly amongst those four schools, we anticipate that if all the housing developments come to fruition the way they are planned to, that we will reach a point where we will exceed capacity. Capacity can be addressed a number of ways, which we hope to come back to you with a number of options. One of which, and you'll notice a caveat on almost every one of these items I mentioned, with no change in special use rooms. Some campuses have 40% of their classrooms are not for regular K-6 instruction. They're for special programmatic purposes, and that has a great effect on what the capacity of an elementary school might be. Just for a little background, whenever we built the elementaries out under Measure A, we targeted for these four schools a 650-student population for their core facilities, except for Hawthorne, which was targeted at 550. In the middle of that build-out, 20-to-1 K-3 came on board, which changed the effective capacity at those schools greatly without adding additional classrooms. So that's just something to – it's important to note. Let me move on to Los Osos. Significant things from the report are that we...
Ms. Parker, let me ask you a quick question about that. Is it class size reduction that's kept, let's say, C.L. Smith, for instance, so far below that 650 capacity, or is it just the demand?
The student generation in its attendance area has not filled that school.
And do we have an understanding of at each site now as to how class size reduction at each one of those sites has impacted that target 650 capacity that we shot for in Measure A?
Yes. The two things that have impacted it are the number of special use classrooms and class size reduction. And they've made a significant change in the capacity of those schools. Yes.
When you say special use classroom, do you want to give a couple examples of that, like music, or what are you talking about?
Whenever the board has actually a policy about the number of special use classrooms that you think an elementary school ought to have, and they were six, I believe, and it included one computer lab, one music, one art science, one RSP, one daycare, and... I think it's five. Okay. I'll just pick a school. Del Mar has been talked about a lot tonight. Del Mar has a total of 27 classrooms, 18 K-6, and 9 special use. They have one computer, one music, one art science, one RSP, one daycare, two Title I's, one state preschool, and one EL. And that affects the capacity that Del Mar can grow to. As well as 20-to-1, which in effect gave you three classrooms in use for every two previously.
And these I can't remember the phrase you used about the special use classrooms. Are they serving primarily our own students attending in that at that school,
yes.
Or are they bringing like the C.L. Smith run some county office of ed programs there.
C.L. Smith has the most county office of ed programs. I think they have two, don't they? And
but most of the clients are our own kids?
Yes, for the most part. We do have some California State preschools. I think Del Mar, in fact, has a California State preschool on campus. And they have an EOC Head Start program, but the EOC Head Start is not taking up a classroom space. They brought in their own trailer for their program.
And these are students that typically reside in our boundary areas, even if they're in the special use classes. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. The special use classes, two Title I classes, those are all our students, along with computer, music, art science, RSP, et cetera. Okay, just briefly about Los Osos. The interesting thing is that the projections do not indicate much growth at all. In fact, we're anticipating operating middle school at less than 400 students, and the high school, at 700 students. Those are significant reductions and something to certainly keep in mind. Del Mar, however, while it may experience some small amount of growth, essentially we think it's going to tick along at pretty much its current enrollment for the foreseeable future.
Mrs. Roger was asking if Morro Bay High School goes to 700, does that mean it's, what is it, seven-man football? Is that what it is, or something like that? Eight-man football?
This brings up a lot of questions about how we might plan to accommodate growth. And it brings up a lot of questions about just how accurate is this demographic study. And I can guarantee you it's not 100% accurate. We will see changes both in the timeline as well as in the quantities. But I know that the developments in the southern part of San Luis Obispo are very far along in their approval process. Not all of them, but many of them. And I really anticipate that we're going to see some enrollment impacts in the southern part of the city. Some things that we would hope to consider in this process of trying to come up with a master plan would be just so that we don't leave any stone unturned, opening a closed school, what we do with our surplus properties, changing boundaries and grandfathering current students and siblings, building existing classrooms on existing campuses, building a new school. We need to consider the timing and phasing for any changes, creating a new magnet school, combining grade levels in new ways, walking distances, busing costs, time impacts, school Title I status, special use classroom allocation, class sizes. As was mentioned earlier, if the legislation goes forward that other districts are given class size reduction 4, 5, and 6, they have a huge facilities problem. I don't know what they're going to do with it. We think the best thing we can do is try and identify the trends and to be proactive in planning for those trends. Since we don't know for sure what the final numbers were going to be and when they're going to occur, there's a possibility that interim solutions might become final solutions because they satisfy our needs 5 years from now, 10 years from now. So we think it's worthwhile to be very thoughtful to try and plan out any changes that we make so that they dovetail into a vision for what we would like to see as we move down the road. And I'd appreciate any board input on this.
Okay. I think Mrs. Dickinson first and then Mr. Millar.
I have a question about the growth. By 2015, perhaps 500 more students at Hawthorne. Now, those kids are all going to eventually go to Laguna and then the high school, right? So this doesn't really address that, but are we thinking about that, too, about, you know, how that...
When they do projections for Laguna Middle School and the high school... they didn't come out overcrowded in the short or the long run, per our consultant's analysis. And I'm sure that he could probably do a better job of telling you why that is, or perhaps Dr. Valentine could.
Well, just to jump in, no, I can't give you a very technical explanation of why we get more elementary kids and no middle school kids, except for the fact that the lower numbers of elementary school students that exist now are expected to pass through the middle schools and the high schools, so that their enrollments are going to drop. As the elementary enrollment comes up, what will happen is it will raise the middle school and will raise the high school to current levels rather than pushing them over their existing level, their current level. And you're looking at me as though, what did he just say? The secondary enrollments will drop to a degree where when the elementaries increase, they'll actually push those dropped enrollments back to their original levels. That's the only answer I have. So
it seems like that might work up through the year that those kids who are at Hawthorne in 2015 get through high school. But just thinking longer term, I mean, eventually, you know, if those same things, if the area keeps growing, it seems like the middle school and high school will grow eventually.
And talking about really long term, the report indicates that there are a number of constraints to annexing additional property into the city of San Luis Obispo in order to facilitate new large developments beyond those that are already planned. Those constraints could be lifted. The report assumes that they are not, and I think that's very much a long-term political question that I'm not sure anyone has the answer for.
One thing that is a concrete example of what might help bring understanding is the city of San Luis has a development in Orcutt that is a proposal. And if you pick a number of students generated from the 900 homes proposed, and who knows if there's going to be 900 or 1,200 by the time they're done, but pick a number, 900, and we generate 400 kids from that, those are in the Sinsheimer, Hawthorne attendance boundary areas. However, there's no indicators that there would be companion growth in some of our other elementary schools that feed Laguna or feed the high school. So while those particular areas might go up, the other particular areas might show the trend of the past and come down, so that ultimately there's a flat line for Laguna and the high school. The idea of this demographic study and what it might mean to us in terms of the future is purely planning. There's no crystal ball here. There's nothing that we could bet our developer fees fund on. There's nothing that we need to do except for be aware of what somebody is projecting to be the trend. And then, as Brad says, this is a monitoring exercise for the future. We want to look at this every year and look at the growth that the city has approved, look at the growth the city hasn't approved perhaps, and say, okay, now we have adjustments that we can look at. But it just brings us to a benchmark that isn't the truth or false. It just is what it is that we can make some plans about. It seems very clear Los Osos is not going to enjoy any or suffer, whatever your perspective might be, any growth. And that's an issue that we then can maybe bring forth some ideas for future planning. You know, San Luis has issues of growth, and we need to be aware of those and what it might mean to Hawthorne or Sinsheimer. But ultimately, I project that this is a issue that other boards and other administrators are going to deal with after we're gone. So it's in the future.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I guess I would throw out a caution that the farther you get away from 2006 and 2007 on these projections, and certainly when you get out to 2025, they should be taken with a grain of salt. And having thrown that out, I'd throw out another idea. One of the interim solutions for the San Luis schools might be a 6, 7, 8 middle school, at least temporarily. I hope it'll be after 2 years from roughly now. But and then the question I want to ask you, Brad, I noticed in the staff backup there, we have about $6 million in the builder's fund.
And the developer fee fund.
And you kind of gave us a ballpark at $12 to $15 million for a new site.
And it depends a lot about what the cost of the land is, what size school you're talking about. And the construction costs have escalated dramatically.
Right. And as we sit here today, what's the availability of state matching monies, those kinds of things that would facilitate our building a facility?
We don't qualify for the state building fund. The state building fund is, you qualify by having unhoused students without the luxury of any special use classrooms to speak of.
I'm not going to repeat. Oops.
I think you're off.
It's on now.
I hit it with my finger. I think her mic is lost. Use mine, Caroline.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, it is. Thank you. Thank you, Marilyn. I really appreciated our doing this, Brad, and I really appreciated, Russell, you saying that we're going to be doing this every year, because I think this is the only way we can have a handle on this kind of thing. Wonderful information in here, and as Walter said, we don't want to look too far out into the future because things are pretty much up for grabs. On page 519, I really appreciated you having table C. For the first time, I was able to look at that and it says under construction at the top. 35 units, 17 units, Rockville close, 9 under construction. Now, what permits pending? Is that really seriously close to construction?
It means that they've made application and it hasn't been fully granted yet.
Okay, so the only ones we know for sure at this point are those that are under construction. Is that right?
Yes, but things have probably changed in the last two
months. And it's going to change again by next year. Yeah, this was really good information. Thank you.
Could I jump in and just ask what Parker Plaza is?
I don't know. I think if you look in the last page of the supplemental information, it's probably listed somewhere, but I have no interest in it.
I just had two things. One, I wanted to clarify what Mrs. Botwin said about looking at this every year or preparing this every year. We'll take a look at our demographics, but I don't think anybody thinks we're going to do a new schoolhouse study every year.
No.
Yeah.
What the study provides us with is benchmarks to look at every year that then we can adjust what the study tells us. And we probably don't need one every year, maybe one every 5 years, depending on how quickly or how dramatically things might change.
Okay. Thank you. And then, Mr. Parker, I can't remember exactly. I know that when we did the little mini redistricting where we sent some of the Arbor students mm-hmm. from who would have attended Sinsheimer to Los Ranchos, that we grandfathered in students currently
Correct.
Enrolled at Sinsheimer. Did we also grandfather in their siblings?
We did.
Okay. Thank
so
you.
Our projections indicate a 7-year phase out of, I think there were 114 students in that particular area that phase out of Sinsheimer over a 7-year period to Los Ranchos.
Thank you.
Just a quick question. With all the growth planned for the southern part of the city and perhaps as part of the Orchid or Margarita plan specifically, is there any identified potential school site in that area?
There is. Over 10 years ago, we had, in fact, an identified site in the Margarita development, which subsequently became an unapprovable site because of the Division of Aeronautics and the proximity to the airport and specifically where the flight patterns are. And we have an identified site, which is a 5-acre site in conjunction with a 5-acre park in the Orchid area development, which we do not own at this point in time, but it's in the planning process.
And I guess I'd just like to close with when I looked at the figures, it worries me to see Hawthorne projected out so large so fast. And I guess one of the discussions we need to have is, are we going to be comfortable having a school of potentially 550 students, which would clearly be our largest elementary school on our smallest piece of property. And so we're going to have to engage in that discussion and what we're comfortable with. Yeah, heavy EL population and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably going to be our first task. So thank you very much. This was great information. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, can we move on to item number 6, which is proposed revisions to Board Bylaw 9250, remuneration, reimbursement, and other benefits? Dr. Valentine.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is an item that the board brought forward to provide an opportunity to discuss compensation for board members' attendance at board meetings. In the course of driving staff to bring this item to the board, we found that while compensation was a routine of life with the board, the bylaws, which were created many, many years ago, had not been updated recently to reflect that that the board does receive compensation. So this item has two purposes: one, to provide an opportunity for the board to discuss compensation, and two, to revise the bylaws.
Okay. Mrs. Botlin.
Again, I think, it's magic. I think I was one that brought this up, was one of the ones that brought it up when we went through it in December 04. And at that time, the reason actually it came up is because several of our board members that ran a couple of years before that and coming up here now, we found out as an average it was running about $1,200 per board member to run, to pay for the expenses, to pay for the pamphlet, the voter pamphlet, and so on and so forth. And that's kind of nice to ask somebody, well, listen, volunteer for the board, run for the board, and then you get on the board, and, you know, to do that costs about $1,200 to $1,400. Consequently, we went ahead, and as we legally could, and Royal Grandy and all the other schools around here do, there was a minimum amount that they could pay. It's not a big paying job. As you see, nobody, no mad masses are running for it. But that we put that in there so that somebody could get on the board and at the end of a year or so pay off their running expenses for the board. And the other expenses that go into being a member of the board, the extra expenses, all the clothes we have to buy, to all the hair, beauty parlor, you know, whatever. Anyway, so at this, I also brought up, and we discussed this at the last meeting, that we're allowed, each board is allowed to vote itself a certain percentage every year additional. And that percentage is not big. It's not overwhelming. It comes out for us to be about $12 a month. Okay, $12 a month. And I asked that this be on the, I'm going to be out of town the next board meeting, and I wasn't going to be there, and I wanted to do it when we still had money. I didn't want to wait until after we blew it all on our projects and all the other things, and then you'd say, oh, no, can't do that. So I'd like the recommendation the Board of Education approve a 5% salary increase for board members. It's recommended board provide input, et cetera, on the revisions.
Other board discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I ran a much cheaper campaign than $1,200 last time, and even as an incumbent, I almost didn't get reelected. But be that as it may, I just want to, I'm going to vote against it. I've always been uncomfortable with the compensation aspect, and I just want to make sure that the board member in Nukuyama who wrote to me when we did vote ourselves pay, not write to me this time, write to Mrs. Botwin.
Other board discussion on this item?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson.
Mrs. Botwin called me and asked if I would second this, and I said that I would. And I want to say that some of us are a real bargain for the district because some board members do get health benefits, and I don't because I have it with my teaching job. And so I'm a really good deal for the board in terms of how much it costs to have me. And I think that $240 a month is very nice to receive. And I do consider it a volunteer job in spite of that. That's like a stipend. And I think 5% raise, considering that we have given generous raises, and this hasn't been a raise since I've been on the board, is not unrealistic. And I think that the district has a good relationship with the board and would not resent a thing like that. And, hey, so I'm going to say that I would second it if Mrs. Botwin recommends it.
before we do that, I guess the question I have is, this seems like really two things. And we do have this as an action discussion item. So I guess I would invite more discussion from board members if there is any. If not, then I would ask, is the board prepared to act on both of these items this evening, or do we just want to make this a discussion item? And so I'd just like to get a feeling from the board for that.
I'd prefer that.
Yeah, we need to separate. Yeah,
I prefer we act on it tonight. We did discuss it at the last meeting.
Okay.
It did come up, and we spent some time discussing it, so it came up again. And I wanted to mention one thing. Walter,
really didn't.
If he wants to call me, that's fine. For my first 11 years on this board, I was a volunteer. I didn't get anything. I had no medical coverage from this board. I had no salary, nothing, and it was fine. I did it. I did it because I'm a retired school teacher. And for me, it was a wonderful way to continue all the things that I've learned over the years. Even though we fight all the time, it doesn't matter. But nonetheless, I do feel much more comfortable since we've had it now for almost 2 years. I feel much more comfortable that we are not saying to people we're not giving these horrendous raises to everybody, administration, faculty, and secretaries, and everybody else, every year. And this year has been very good. Next year is going to be very good. I think I would like the extra money to now and then take my husband out to dinner, and I have a good bottle of wine, because I miss the cooking when I'm reading the board book. It takes me an average of 4 to 5 hours to read through a board book, and then to come here for that night. These are little extras. And not that we're going to go out and buy a new car or anything. So if you're a friend from Kiama, call me. We'll talk about it.
There's a lady, and she's a board member there, and she was really upset that we were taking money out of the pockets of children. I wrote back to her and told her that, you know, nobody in our school district has complained or written or is upset by this, and that it must be great to have a school district where everything's all perfect and you can start worrying about other people's school district.
I couldn't resist that. I'm just a smart aleck guy.
You are a smart aleck. And I think that this is our first evening of discussion on this. It was brought forward as a request. So the first thing is, I know Mrs. Botwin, because she's going away, would like to move forward on this, but I do need to check with the other board members. How do you feel, Mrs. Roger? Do you want to move forward on both of these items? Are you feeling like you'd like to hold off on this and discussing to the next room? Or I would put this out, since this is an issue that Mrs. Botwin is interested in, that we as a board could delay at least one or both of these actions until she returns from her vacation. So, Mrs. Roger, what's your preference? Hold off, or
I think we can split it into two items: the change in the bylaws,
yes,
and then the discussion of board compensation.
Yep.
I was not willing to bring this forward. It's not the compensation issue. It is not a big deal to me either way, really.
Okay.
I think $12 is nominal monies, and the wear and tear on my car going to board meetings and expulsion hearings and subcommittee meetings and what have you, it doesn't begin to approach that. So... But on the other hand, $12 is not going to make a huge difference in my family's financial picture either way. I think when we initially voted to compensate ourselves, it was in response to the very large amount of money that it cost me to run 4 years ago, and an acknowledgement that if we wanted just regular working people to be able to participate in this community's service, that we that everybody is not a doctor, a lawyer, or an Indian chief, that we needed to...
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Absolutely not. That we needed to make it possible for them so that it wasn't a hardship. and I was appreciative because I think that I was partly the impetus for it. So I can go either way on the compensation, and if we need to make a decision tonight or if it's Mrs. Botwin's preference, then...
I was actually moved by your argument, Marilyn, that the intent to have a truly representative board up here that represents, you know, a broad section of the community is really what that pay is an incentive for. And okay. And I think that's an important issue for all of us to consider.
Okay. Yeah,
well,
please.
I asked Mrs. Botwin a little earlier if this board had a mechanism.
Could you let us know what your name is, please?
I will. I just asked her.
Could you do it right now? Thank you.
I'm Susan Goya, and I happen to be a candidate. And I've had experience with other school boards, but in any case, I'd ask Mrs. Botwin if there was a mechanism for making comment outside from the list that you had earlier, you know, seemed to be pre-written earlier, and she said, just walk up to the mic and do it. So I thought, okay, I will. And I wanted to respond to Mrs. Rogers' point, which is well taken, about helping people who are running and making sure it's not an elitist board. I appreciate that sentiment. I think it's a wonderful sentiment. But I would also say, if you lose, you just spent the money anyway, right? So it only helps if you win. And I know that really has nothing to do with your vote, per se. And I know that what I'm going to say just now, it has nothing to do with your vote, per se. But it seems to me that if our county really wants to encourage that sort of public participation, there ought to be some mechanism somewhere else besides the school board for making it possible for people to run and not incur that kind of expense. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would suggest that we, it seems like the board is willing to go forward on this. I would suggest that we split this into two resolutions. The first would be proposed revision to board bylaw 9250. Would somebody like to make that motion? And that most, that would be...
since that should, I'll be glad to make it.
That
since
would be the revision of the bylaws.
That should have been done on February 4th, 2004. So I'll go ahead and make that revision be put into on paper as it should be.
Okay, so it's been moved by Mrs. Botwin.
Seconded
by Mrs. Roger. Any other comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. And then let's move on to the remuneration portion of this. I would entertain a motion to increase our salaries by up to 5% as per Ed Code. Would somebody like to make that motion?
Naturally, I'm money hungry. I'm
okay.
Going to take that $12 and run off.
It's been moved.
I move that we approve a 5% salary increase for board members.
Okay. It's been moved by Mrs. Botwin. Seconded by Mrs. Dickinson. Any discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Millar.
I want to thank you for speaking. I am going to change my mind and vote yes, and the reason I'm going to is that when I voted originally for compensation, it was to some extent to avoid this elitist board, and it was also recognizance.
Okay, any other discussion?
I'll make a comment as well.
Mr. Peter.
After hearing your comments, thank you. And again, I think I agree with you philosophically. We're not here for the money. I think I'll change my vote on this as well. And personally, we'll make the contribution to something district-related as opposed to...
okay.
I already have a surfboard or two. So.
Thank you. And
accept donations from other folks.
Okay. I'll share with you.
You know, and I must say that I came in opposition to this. And I too will change my vote to an aye when the time comes. So I'll call for the vote right now. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0.
And I guess the lady at Kuyama can write to me.
She can. Unaudited year-end actual financial statement, first reading. Mr. Miller.
Thank you very much. The San Luis Coastal Unified School District adopted its 2005-2006 budget on June 21st, 2005. The 2005-2006 budget was estimated at that time based on the assumption that all areas of responsibility would expend their full allocation. Education Code 42-100 requires school districts to approve the actual expenditures at the close of each fiscal year. These unaudited financial statements will be the basis for the 05-06 audit reports performed by the district auditors. In the process of closing the books for this year, we established a Fund 20 in preparation for compliance with GASB 45. GASB 45 is a technical requirement that we report our future liabilities for such things as health benefits for retirees, and we have an attendance incentive plan that each employee for 10 years has been able to earn a bonus on their retirement based upon their attendance. And those two items have accrued a liability that's in the millions of dollars. And we'll do an actuarial study in the next 4 months or so in order to establish exactly what that is. It is estimated that our health benefits future liability for retirees is in the $15 to $20 million range. And that's based upon an actuarial study that was done by Paso Robles Unified, who has much different retiree benefits and other aspects, so it's hard to get a grip on it, but it's going to be in the millions of dollars. And then the accounting requirements are that we establish a fund that will have money in it to pay that future liability. Right now, we pay $600,000 a year in retiree benefits on a pay-as-you-go basis. That's no longer acceptable to the people who require us to report our financials in a certain manner, thus the change. This particular year, as we closed the books, we put $1.4 million in that Fund 20 to fully fund the attendance incentive and to begin the funding of our GASB 45 requirements for benefits. We'll find out what that is, and we'll bring to the board a future item on that particular aspect. But I wanted to make it clear that that's in the budget. That's in the year-end unaudited actuals, and we will continue to make allocations for that on an annual basis.
Earnings and expenses totaled $4,958 for the appraisal of the Toro Creek property.
I was going to say that was a good memory because I thought it was around 25 also, but that's comes out of the building fund. And by the way, that appraisal is required by law. We must do that in order to establish a guideline for the value of the property. So, you know, it would have been a matter of $2,000 or $10,000. We would have had to have expended the money. The 0506 unaudited actuals is what we're interested in here. And quickly, I'll go through the highlights, if you will. And I think they are highlights for that particular fiscal year. Our total revenue was $62,344,000, of which $47,800,000 came from property tax revenues within our district's boundaries. The certificated salaries were almost $30 million. The classified salaries were $9.5 million. And the employee benefits, the item that drives the GASB 45 liability, is $11 million. The total expenditures were $60,266,000, which left us with a revenue over expenditure number of $2 million. We made some transfers in from other funds, and we transferred out $1.7 million, $1.4 to Fund 20 to help fund the liability, and $300,000 went to the Deferred Maintenance Fund. Our beginning balance, or our beginning savings account, was $8.8 million, and our net increase in fund balance was almost $500,000 for an ending balance of $9,321,000. If you take that $9,321,000 and you divide it into four different groups, one's a group that's established by law, one's a group that has restricted balances in it, one's a group of one-time revenues that the board has established should be isolated and identified as their individual amounts, and one is for lottery. If you divide those four up, you see that our legal requirements are almost $3 million. Our restricted balances are $1.5 million. Our one-time revenues are $110,000. And our lottery and others are $2.3 million. We have a unappropriated fund balance or a savings account without identity of $2.3 million in 05-06. And that is as healthy as it's been since our fiscal crisis of 3-4 years ago with the PG&E bankruptcy and the result decline in property taxes. So we've made great strides in recapturing and establishing ourselves financially again. Our 06-07 budget is a healthy budget. It shows for the first time in 2 years that we're spending money less than what we plan on taking in terms of a budget. Even though we budget to spend a little bit more than we get, we inevitably don't do that because people don't spend all that they're budgeted to do. And it results in an amount of money that drops into our savings account, if you will. So the budget for 05-06 and the unaudited actuals turned out to be a very positive story in that particular year.
Could I ask you just a question here? If I looked at...
So does that mean that the CASI money in 05-06 unaudited actuals was one-time money and we're not going to see a similar sum for CASI for this?
I think we're getting some money, but we don't. It's an annual. It's a one-time amount, but it is a grant that's been renewed for 06-07. There's no guarantee it'll be there for 07-08 or 08-09 or anything like that. It differs from Title I or SIP money in that aspect of it.
And I have this kind of gnawing question every year, and I don't know whether I've asked it before, but please stop me if I have.
Hold it.
I'm curious about how well we do with our 05-06 projected budget versus unaudited actuals. How good were we with our projected budget for 05-06?
We were good.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Miller.
Actually, I can present a set of comparative numbers for you and get that to you. But what I would say to you is the judgment of whether we were good about our budget or not was that we adhered to it or did better than. Anytime you violate a budget and you exceed your expenditures or underestimate your revenues, you're going to have issues to confront. In this particular year, 05-06, we exceeded our projected revenues, we underspent our projected expenditures, and we have, as a result, a surplus of funds to carry us into the future. So if you use that as your technique for judgment, I say we did very well. If your technique of judgment is how really close did we get, then I would say that we missed it by some, but we miss it every year, because we rely upon 12 school sites and 15 different programs and a certain large number of employees to generate expenditures. And we did very well on our revenues, okay? So we hit our revenues really tightly. But the expenditures are the area that we just can't control because so many people have control over that particular aspect. And I hadn't heard that question before, so, yeah.
Other questions from board members?
Bring this back as a consent item on the next...
Are there questions for board members? Okay, Mrs. Roger.
Mr. Miller, in 05-06, I believe it was that we hired the Ma clerk.
Yes.
And I'm noticing that our unaudited actuals from Ma reimbursement, 112,756, and the same number projected for 06-07. I'm wondering if we're seeing the benefit of having increased revenues generated by that position that was created.
What page are you looking at for the 112?
7.4.
Okay. What we did with the, I wanted to make sure. The revenues for 05-06 were $200,000, and we're projecting $400,000 in the next year. So the amount that's left over is something that we don't alter until the year ends. And I don't...
So are we treating this then sort of like we treat our lottery funds?
Yes,
get it 1 year, spend it the next?
Thank you, yes. It is a 1 year in arrears kind of situation. But I don't want to leave the impression that the mall clerk is the reason why it the initial year was 200,000. We didn't have a mall clerk. Then we get a mall clerk and it went to 400. It wasn't because of the clerk. It simply was because of the number of quarters involved and the fact that everybody participated and we had an organized approach to the reporting of it. So those three aspects combined to generate some revenue.
Wasn't the mall clerk facilitating?
Yes.
That organized yes. approach to pursuing reimbursement?
Yeah, that's a better way of putting it. Thank you.
So, no problem. So when you look under revenue, I just don't know. Russell, I'm not with you at all. I don't know where the 400,000 is.
Yeah, it's not on that summary page. The revenues are broken down. I'm not even sure you would find it in this in any of the pages that are attached, but I can get it for you in terms of a year-over-year number if you wish.
May I see that in a Friday packet, please?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Russell, this is a question I was actually going to ask you when we get together next week.
Okay.
Maybe you want to respond to it tonight. If you look at in the revenue summary, I see that, 06, 07, following 05, 06, that federal, state, and local revenues are down while revenue limit is up. Is that a trend? And if so, what can you say about that?
Okay, now what you got is a point in time on our budget projections. We create a budget in May, and the 06-07 budget was done in May. At that time, we did not project what our federal and state categorical revenues were going to be because we simply didn't know. No state budget had been passed. No federal budget had even fleshed out any kind of an approach toward programs. So what we project in terms of revenues is basically what we know. And by the same token, there aren't any expenditures down in the expenditure section for those related grants that you would see in the unaudited actuals because we got one in 05-06. So 06-07's budget doesn't necessarily have what we will be getting in terms of state and federal money. In October, you will see a revised budget, which will have those numbers in them, because now the state budget's been fleshed out, the federal budget has started to take shape, and we'll be able to project that better. But to answer your question in terms of trends, the trend is down on federal money, and for this year, the trend was up in state money. So after 3 years of downturn in state programmatic money, and some restrictions placed on it. This year, it showed up. No, it doesn't necessarily because of the fact that we didn't project it in our budget until we knew it was coming.
One last question. Thank you. You've clarified a lot of issues, Russell. Just, when you just start talking, it's great. Then I don't feel dumb like, okay, he answered that already. Hey, question on Fund 11, the adult education. We've been running way over, and I see now we're up to $1 million, almost $2 million fund balance. And this has been that.
Or what might be a synergy between the two, okay? And then as those arise, then we can use those. But adult ed is an enterprise fund that has its own aspects to it, and we can only hope that it continues to grow, and we will be able to find a use for the joint uses between the school district and the adult ed.
That's what I was hoping we would do. Is you had done it so successfully last year and the year before by expanding the classes, computers, and all that, and shared. Let's keep going.
I have one quick question about that.
Yeah, Mrs. Dickinson.
Maybe, I don't know, this just occurred to me about the independent study that we're considering. I mean, there might be some adults who would want to do independent study to complete their diplomas. And maybe
adult already has a GED program that probably would compete with that particular aspect.
Okay.
But the independent study program, well, one of the things that we're looking at maybe is some vocational type programs that would use adult ed and district type things. It's in its infancy, and it's just an idea, but we continue to try and examine where we can find some joint uses for the money.
Okay. Sure.
One more, and then I'm done, Russell. It's easy, too. The cafeteria fund has always been wholly and totally self-supporting.
It took a wee dip into its reserves this past year. Was that an anomaly in your opinion?
Cafeteria Fund is challenged under recent law and legislation, particularly concerning healthy foods. The reality is that the profit-making type foods will be soon banned from school district being able to offer those. And at the same time, we've been giving some very healthy pay raises to our employees. So the reason that Cafeteria Fund has got to be managed a lot more carefully in the future are those two particular reasons. It hasn't always operated in the positive side of things. It has had some times when it goes dips, and this is one of those years. We're going to look at the whole aspect of labor, food costs, and how we market ourselves to the kids for the next couple of years, because we've got to get through this no chocolate, no soda, which, let's face it, are our huge profit items. And we won't be able to offer those after this year. So we're gonna have to reinvent ourselves in a number of different ways.
And thanks.
I'm going to just close with, and perhaps that's not such a bad idea when we look at coming up with revisions or reviewing our wellness policy, looking at the obesity rates in California. What do we say? We're about 22%. People considered obese, and then overweight is much more significant than that, and sort of fits in with our health and PE stuff as well.
We really are not resisting, you know, those items, except for it does cause us to have to relook at ourselves. And so, you know, in the reality of today's world, you can't do it.
And perhaps philosophically, the board, depending on how other board members feel, it would not. It could be in our best interest to see if we can shift funds from one fund.
Buying fruit drinks or whatever it is, and it's a lower profit item. And so we have to consider how that makes into the mix that we offer to kids. We'll get there.
And then I guess we'll bring this back next meeting as an action consent item.
Thank you.
Okay. Move on to item number 8, study session planning. Dr. Valentine.
Thank you. The board subcommittee developed The board subcommittee developed a protocol for developing study sessions, and tonight we have an opportunity to kind of work through the first part of that protocol. We can't work through all of it until we actually have the study session, but we're going to have an opportunity to work through the pre-planning section of that protocol. I draw the board's attention in the backup item to the first numbered items, which are the actual protocol themselves, which is to select a topic, to clarify questions to be addressed, to identify participants, estimate the impact of preparation upon staff, evaluate with respect to critical areas of interest, present the topic, conduct follow-up, and then consider implications for the strategic plan. And tonight, walk through steps 1 through 5. As kind of our first venture. For step 1, the select a topic, the board directed staff to go ahead and proceed with the notion of a strategic plan, progress report, or interim report. So I think unless the board has some other topic they want to talk about, I think we've accomplished number 1, which is to select one. The second piece deals with clarifying the questions to be addressed. And what staff has done is provided a series of questions which are bulleted at the bottom of the backup and represent at least our thinking to date about what we think comprehensive questions that could be answered in a study session and would be answered in a study session if that was the board's wish, but also to seek any input if there are additional questions. And I guess maybe we'd stop on item number 2 to see if there are other ideas for questions that the board would like us to get at.
I was fortunate enough to be able to, with many of the staff members from San Luis Coastal, to be able to go to an in-service today by Dr. Timothy Canold on professional learning communities. And one of the things that he suggested is when looking at things such as strategic planning, that we have a clear goal in mind. And I know we have some goals. I guess one of the questions I had is, in terms of, say, the English learners are closing the achievement gap with our Title I students, what specific targets are we going to be aiming at in order to verify whether the money is being spent wisely or in the ways that we want? In other words, are we going to be looking at, with our English language learners, an increase in CELT testing by so many points or something like that? Or are we going to say we want to look at the numbers of students, Title I students who score a proficient will increase from whatever the percentage is, and I'm not going to go back right now.
We won't have metrics, or we don't all, I strike that, we don't always have metrics to give us some guidance about how well we're doing with those plans. Is that kind of what you're getting at? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think giving us some signs that we can see that we're actually achieving, not only for the board to evaluate, but for the staff and for the school site staff, and for, so parents can know whether we're getting where we need to go, or whether we're getting where we have determined we have, you know, we've established that we need to go.
Great question.
The one item that I just wanted to bring out, because I think the bullet points on 8.1 sort of circle around it. I just want to make sure that it's there. And that's board goals and objectives. I think that's the items that the thing that should be driving the strategic planning process. And of course, it's a symbiotic relationship, or I think it should be, where the progress we make in strategic planning informs the board when they come up with their goals and objectives. And I think we're talking about that in what are the objectives of the plan and that kind of thing. But it's the, I want to enshrine the importance of board goals and objectives to directing the strategic planning process. I think this is a good way of going about formulating study sessions, and I think it's a good change. I feel like we've been doing a lot of this stuff in our process anyway, but it's nice to have it formalized.
I just wanted to, something, a lesson I learned, I thought all of these were pretty good. But in number 6, it says present topic, and number 7, it says conduct a follow-up summary. And I got thinking about that, and I know at the last couple of meetings, I was amazed at the questions that came up when the topic was presented. When we had the counseling, the counselors there, and at the end of it became much more involved, and another one that we had too. So I put an addition here because I thought maybe presenting the topic, and actually none of us are professional in all of these areas. So a lot of this information is for our benefit. Well, most of it. And after present the topic, I wrote in allowing for questions to arise from the presentation, which we may need further clarification of, to end with a preposition. So that's what I'd like to put in there. Present the topic, dash, allowing for questions to arise from the presentation. Because depending on what's going on, not all of us are going to know a whole heck of a lot about it. Chris, heck of a lot about it. Thank you. Which may need further clarification. We may want to take it a little further before we do a follow-up summary and more information, or may not, but I'd like to have it in there for that purpose, for that benefit. I like what Walter said, too, about the board goals and objectives. I think that's an intricate part of this, too.
I like that idea, Caroline, about a little bit of open-ended. That's pretty much the purpose of it, really, to see what happens. In terms of year of being, you know, a program improvement school, are we just working real hard not to be put in that position and fit in with those feds that are setting us up? Or are these truly our own goals about what we think quality education and our own goals for children are? And considering this new music and art opportunity that's come up, you know, that becomes a factor in us continuing to clarify what is important for students to know and be able to do. And I kind of hear yeah, we like music and art, but we don't have time for music and art because we're working so hard and getting all of our kids to learn to read and do their maths. We won't get in trouble with No Child Left Behind. So I don't know. I mean, I hope that's not the case, but is this a time when we're going to talk about how music and art opportunities and funding are going to fit in with our clarifying what students need to be now? Well, isn't that right on here? Continues to clarify what's important. I just wonder when we're having that discussion. That doesn't sound like it's part of this. But those are questions that come up in my mind when I'm thinking about questions that have to do with...
Would those be perhaps clarifying questions? What?
My understanding, and help me with this, Dr. Valentine, is that we're trying to clarify questions. And so are you suggesting, Mrs. Dickinson, that one of the other bulleted points here would be, we talk about what are critical issues addressed by the strategic plan. Is that sort of what you're thinking is? Are we inclusive of critical issues in the strategic plan that are sort of outside of No Child Left Behind is what I heard you say. So would that be something that you're thinking about in terms of what you'd like to get at? What I hear you saying is that you think we're spending too much time on No Child Left Behind. Is that strategic planning? And is that something you'd like to see emerge out of this?
That sounds pretty much like it. I'm just wanting us to be conscious of... when we do our planning for our district,
right.
You know, what are our motivations so we're clear on them and we're not missing opportunities because we're not really clear on what our motivations are for doing these things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Mr. Peter.
Yeah. I would just like to add one or make a suggestion that we add one thing to the list that you prepared. And I think it was a very comprehensive list. That we specifically try to outline how we'll measure success. It's the issues that you raised and what the metrics are behind that. And I know you guys both touched on the subject, but I think if we add that language specifically, it'll help us all as we go through this process.
Figuring out ways specifically that we know we're measuring success. And so kind of thinking about what you're saying, Adrian, is a measurement of success might be an increase in art and music programs, an increase in minutes provided to elementary school students for art and music, for example. You know, and something like that.
Because ultimately we're held accountable, to those objectives, to those metrics, and it's a great...
Look at it. Our strategic plan is not. It's fluid. But the way it reads here, it's kind of set in stone. And I see no topic under which we can add, delete, or change any section of the strategic plan as it is. So I want to make sure that we keep that. Where would that? Where would that fit in, Ed? Where we would change or add or delete any section of the strategic plan as the board moves in a new way and wants to add something else in lieu of it?
I think it's a great question. If you look at the bulleted questions at the lower part of the board backup, the third one from the bottom, the third bullet, is how do we add to that list?
Okay, but that again, see, that's my thinking, that it seems like it's already engraved in stone. How do we add to the list? I would like to change that in... What way can we change the list? Delete something?
No.
Adds? In other words,
how do we change the direction of the strategic plan?
Exactly.
Well, ask that question then.
Is this strategic plan engraved in stone?
No.
No.
We have $3 million of budget for a year dedicated to certain objectives.
Right.
And the question I'm hearing, Ms. Bowen, is how do we change the direction of the strategic plan if we decide at some point that, hey, this isn't a direction that we want to go?
Right, although I'm not talking about the whole plan. I'm talking like little parts of it.
Exactly, or any part of it.
Yeah, okay.
Right, and I think, again, that circles back to the concern that I've heard several of us make, which is how do we determine whether, in fact, the strategic plan has been successful? Okay.
Seeing no other discussion, let's move on to the action consent agenda. Dr. Valentine, do you have enough direction for this? Okay, great. So I'm going to call these out, and if there's any public comment out there on any of these, just holler. Number 9, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Number 10, approval to hire elementary class size instructional aides for 2006-2007. 11, approval of proposed salary increases for positions exempt from merit system, not represented by bargaining units. Number 12, acceptance of donations. Number 13, disposition of surplus property. Number 14, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Number 15, approval of purchase orders. Number 16, approval of warrants and payroll. Number 17, approval to file notice of completion for bid number 201, roofing of selected buildings at Morro Bay High School. Number 18, award of bid number 204, milk and dairy products. And number 19, approval of quarterly reports on uniform complaint filings.
Move approval of items 9 through 19.
Second.
It's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mrs. Botwin. Any further discussion on these items? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. We'll move on to item number 20. Item number 21, advanced agenda. Anybody have anything? I do have something that I would like to at least put out there for, if not advanced agenda, for a Friday packet. And that is, I have some concerns about the impact of traffic congestion on our school sites on the western side of the city, specifically, and our access to the schools.
I will disclose, though, that I live over there, and that's why I'm really interested in it.
I would like to have this as a report back to the board. Well, you know, it's going to have an impact. That development's going to have an impact on our ability of our students to get to school.
An emergency evacuation.
Well, maybe we do. Dr. Valentine, how would you propose that that be given back to the board?
Well, I think what I'm hearing is the board would like a report back on it, and if you can give staff a little bit of time to talk with city planners and so forth about development and traffic mitigation, we can bring back what that looks like and maybe some analysis of what it means for those schools.
That would be great. Do you think you could do that by October?
I'm hearing yes, so I'll say okay. Yes.
Great. Thank you. Are there other items for advanced agenda, Mrs. Botwin?
To save time, I had some additional questions about the combination classes. Ed, may I just call you and run it by you, and then I'll save you guys time. Okay.
Great. Other topics for advanced agenda items? Boy, we are just cooking now. Okay, I think we've got advanced agenda items. Let's move on. Mr. Robinette, do you want to just quickly talk about the Personnel Commission annual report, or just say that it's here and read it and enjoy it? I think he's shaking his head and he's happy with that. We just want to, you know what, and I think it's really important for us to thank the Personnel Commission and for all their hard work. And I know Mrs. Botwin attends their meetings regularly.
Yeah, I went to the last one and I told them we had, all the board members had received this. Did we get it in a Friday packet? Okay, because I told them that all the board members, and it came up the last board meeting, John Spadafore praised them tremendously, and I praised them, and I said, bunch of board members praised you guys. And it's true. And I also told them at this last Wednesday meeting that their goals were incredible and that their meetings were, what? And also the meetings are incredibly brief. That one was about 45 minutes. It was wonderful.
Report.
Well, then, let's give them the 5%.
report item number 23, reports by board members and district administrators. I just want to say I'm going up to Sacramento this weekend for my CSBA duties. I'm on the nominating committee, and we'll be interviewing candidates for the position of vice president and president-elect, and we've had a really good session. It should be really exciting. I'm really, really stoked about being able to participate in that way.
Nothing.
You failed to mention you have a son.
Yep. And don't forget, parents, please make every opportunity to go to your school back-to-school nights. It's really an important time to be able to hear what the school staff is doing with your children and an opportunity for you to participate in your schools. Mr. Millar.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. I don't actually have a report. It's just that this time of year I try to remind the initial...
That's correct.
Initial packet there. Mrs. Or Dr. Matakovich, you enlighten us about that.
It's on our registration card. They can indicate that as they enroll their child.
Thank you.
And on behalf of the board, I'd like to thank Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School for inviting the board to the different events and by giving us cards that will allow us to access those. How about a motion to adjourn? Mrs. Oh, and she loses her. Mrs. Dickinson. Do we have a second for adjournment?
Second.
Okay, it's moving second. All, you know, seven.